Welcome back to Deep Thoughts, ladies and gentlemen. All right, so today, you know, you've had a couple pretty intense episodes. I thought we would do a very special episode using a very special kind of fringy piece of history to tie it all together. There are something out there. There is the proper reference. Maybe there is. Something called the Akashic Records. It belongs to the quote-unquote religion of theosophy. Most of the words around this, the Akashic Records, are almost ludicrous to try and say, but it boils down to this. A group of individuals in the 1800s and just slightly into the 19th century had theorized that because they were trying to capture this layer of consciousness that we have most recently really tried to parse as just human beings, and especially all of you listeners of Deep Thoughts Radio. I mean, you guys just exude this research, but we're not calling it the Akashic Records, a.k.a. S-C-H-I-C-I-C. That's how you spell it. It's essentially the concept that there is a, what they term as like a film that is out there, like a piece of film that you would expose and then develop. It's kind of like The Shine from The Shining, but that it contains the entire record of all events that have ever occurred, and that it's out there for our accessibility if we wanted to tap into it to gain knowledge of anything. And that is a two-sided sword, a two-sided blade, which is to get knowledge of the history of the universe and to get the knowledge of a particular invention and perhaps see the future. So I guess it's three sides to this thing. Now, we know that history is just a kind of a BS term for the way that the victors of history want you to see how the universe, Earth, what the history of Earth was, right? So they want to tell you who the bad guys were, who the good guys were, what was, what is, and whatever could be. In the present day invention pool, this would be for anyone trying to invent something. What's the spectrum there? Everything. You're trying to write a movie. You're trying to write a book. You're Nikola Tesla trying to make an invention. You are Royal Raymond Rife trying to figure out how to combine optics to get a 50,000 zoom microscope in 1931. You want to know how the body works. The knowledge is out there. We're going to go back to all these steps here. And then you have the future. Well, who's ever tried to see the future? Well, Nostradamus is one of them. He was predicting, apparently, you know, way out in the future. Now, I think that Nostradamus was, in the modern era of the 21st century, is now finally recognized as sort of a person that was writing so much content that, of course, he's going to be right about a few things. And he wrote in a Francis Bacon, King James Bible manner, which is so metaphorical, cold reading, palm reader methodology, that there'll be a leader and he rises up and he will tell his people that they are the best and that they will, and he's Hilter is his name, right? How many of you remember the world was going to end at the end of 2012 because some douchebags, you know, convoluted a Mayan calendar when everybody who was Mayan and had decades and decades of history looking at this exact calendar with their ancestors and lots of other scholars, they said, look, the date's in the 4000s, if this thing is even true. And the end of the world could be a metaphor for a new epoch of what man's going to be experiencing, not the end of the world as in, you know, the second coming or something, right? Philip K. Dick, the writer, the sci-fi writer who was responsible for the book Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep, which was then repurposed for the movie Blade Runner, had the event that I told you guys about in several episodes. If you don't know this, I'll repeat it. He was laying down in his front room. He's a 6'3" gigantic guy for being a writer. And he had had a crystal that was hanging in his window, his front window. And it's just doing a little twirling thing like they do. And he said that the sunlight hit this crystal and hit him right in the face. And all of a sudden, he had an epiphany that his son, who was 6 months old, in a high chair in the kitchen, being fed by his wife, had a tangle in his gut on the right side of his upper intestine. And instantaneously, he knew all the anatomy of where this thing was. He could see it in his head. And he was told this was a life-threatening situation. Not wanting to waste any time, he jumps up, grabs his kid, freaks out his wife, goes to the hospital, tells the doctors, right here, the so-and-so, so-and-so, all this anatomy. Okay, sir, calm down, sit down, we'll go take a look. They sonogram the child and find out for exactly what he said, exactly where he said the child had a tangled intestine. Now, they did tell him, look, your son didn't have a minute-to-minute threat of his well-being, but certainly within a few months, this could have become really bad. It could have killed him. So, how did you know this, sir? He's like, well, you know, it just came to me, man. And you're like, well, what do you do for a living? Are you a doctor? You knew all this anatomy. How do you know this? A little weird, right? So, you know, I've told you about several little tiny epiphanies that I've had of future predictions, but not days ahead. Well, technically my 9/11 one was probably, I was going to bed around midnight the night before, which New York time would have been about 3 a.m. And so if the first event occurred around 8 o'clock, then I'm doing a 5-hour prediction for what was going to happen. Something's going to happen. It's going to involve planes and it's going to be bad. Really weird. The problem I have with all the information I've heard about this and read about this is that it's sort of a deterministic model of how the universe works. It's all written in stone, and we're just going to look back and forth on this linear time thing. Man has a really weird challenge in envisioning 3D elements. And what I mean by that, and it's really odd, that when we dream, remember, when you dream, your mind is creating the best special effects that any Hollywood studio could hope to create. Your mind creates convincing human beings that you've never seen before. The anatomy, all the shadows, their voices, their movements. Somehow, you're able to put that together every single night if you dream like me. The architecture, it's absolutely perfect. Even if it's changing second to second or minute to minute, when you go in a room and you come back and it's different, it doesn't matter. Your ability to synthesize reality in your mind is infinite, isn't it? What limitations do you have? I've seen spaceships that I've never seen before. I've been on planet Earth while they happen. I've been in the future in my dreams, I would say half a dozen times, but 3 super lucid moments. One of them was utterly lucid, and I knew I was in the future, and it was actually this green, gorgeous sort of what the wilderness looks like in the UK, where you have big strings of trees that kind of block out, you know, estates. No necessarily like big mansions or anything, but there was definitely 2 buildings. One was like this weird gazebo thing that was sort of this twisted gazebo with this really cool chair that was there. And then the landing pad where people landed and docked their vehicle and went inside. Couldn't really see to the right to see inside that much, but this docking bay was just cool. The vehicles would land and they had these little posts that would come out, and the floor was like this beautiful artwork of like Fibonacci patterns like crazy. It was all the golden mean, you know, the one that spirals out, that's 2-dimensional, right? And the things would grab the posts and then the car, vehicle, whatever would just get parked. And it was as if it didn't need to be that way, but they chose to make it mechanical out of some weird homage to the mechanical. I saw that again in a very Blade Runner setting with skyscrapers all around me in a different futuristic model. And this time I looked down and it was like all of the metal was really cool and kind of that petroleum metal that's got all the cool, you know, the way it was tempered or whatever. It's got purples and blues. Super cool, right? Okay. Maybe that's where everyone gets this Akasic layer of reality. But what about this linear time versus sort of, for the sake of it's a term, but it's not going to be the right one that's used at the CERN Hadron Collider, but the multiverse idea, that you have these infinite layers, because man has a problem looking at a tabletop that has the spread of food or whatever you got going on, you know, create a project, whatever, and to see it in an infinitely divisible set of layers to go up and down. Time would be just picking a vector going across the table. The next increment of movement is the next increment of time, hence change that you're going through, your state change. Your soul might be this generic consciousness that's just traveling through this amusement park ride. Remember, I always told you, you know, the one of the best analogies I could figure out about trying to tell you about your body, mind, soul connection is that you are the trumpet. You're the air that's going through the trumpet. The trumpet is your body. And so when you toxify yourself or allow someone to mess with you or you get in an accident, your trumpet gets dented a little bit. It's not that you can't fix the trumpet, but you notice it once it gets moved around a little bit. Some dents don't change the song that you play. Other dents will make you blow flat or blow sharp. You need to fix that part of it. Maybe your valves get sticky. Got to clean that stuff out. Could be a state of mind that's clogging your valves. Could be a significant amount of toxification that you've done to yourself. Could be a severe injury. And then, because we are amazing beings, right? We can actually learn to play the trumpet completely different. We could blow in the out hole and make the song through the mouthpiece. You never know, right? I'm in the middle of an establishment that sells a lot of brass instruments. I got trumpets and all kinds of xylophones and instruments around me. No strings. But you know, we have these like legendary musicians come in here and they'll take the mouthpiece from a trumpet or something. Something has to have a mouthpiece. And they'll put it up and play songs through it. And there's nothing to it. There's no vowels. There's no nothing. But they could play the bugle, you know, song to wake up the soldiers in the morning. And they're just playing it right through the thing. Because it's really, like they said in Top Gun, it's not the plane, it's the pilot, you know. And you're always the pilot as your soul. I think everyone who's ever made a decision that affected their life in a big way, a moment where it's just, I have a choice. I can go left and I can go right. And both paths are wonderful, to be honest. But there's going to be a bunch of Chotskys I get in A that will not exist in B. And there's a bunch of stuff in B I will not get in A. And I got to make this choice. Sometimes for people, it's moving from one place to another, leaving their hometown like I did. Sometimes it's marrying one person versus another. That is when I think man has proof that time is probably not linear, because you had a choice. You have the choice between right and wrong, good and evil. You know that's a choice. And sadly, it's not made consciously half the time. Not even half the time. In this era, do people get the choice to choose right and wrong? They get coerced. And believe me, there's very little power trying to coerce you into good. All the power in the universe to convince you to go bad, right? To coerce you to being bad. Which is why we usually try to do the opposite of what certain organizations tell us to do. And almost every time, categorically, we win. So this Akasic record thing gets pushed up, and several individuals over time tap into this, and you know, it never got a gigantic movement as far as I can tell from the research, but it's definitely where you get folks that claim to have the ability to look back in the past of mankind. And this is where we have some of the genesis of things like Atlantis and Lemuria. When I first heard that the Because there's two parts to this. You have Plato, apparently, and again, I've had some listeners challenge me, and I thank them for it, where they're saying, like, okay, so Plato supposedly wrote about Atlantis. And the question was, well, did he really? I mean, you know, history's all screwed up. So did he really? I was mentioning, you know, Plato writing about the time before the moon. People are like, well, maybe he did, maybe he didn't write that. Then I found it in Native American lore by another listener that the moon was something brand new and they remember it showing up. All right. Well, you're right, man. That could be something inserted to create some controversy. Heck, it could have been inserted in the last 15 years, man. Why is it that there's so much knowledge we just found out in the last 10 years? But we also have paperwork from certain organizations saying they're going to create psyops to see who's gullible and to basically divide us against each other. And that's part of what I want to talk about in this episode. How many times have you watched a movie where individuals are trying to explore a location? Perhaps it's archaeologists, perhaps it's like the movie Prometheus, where they found this alien location on a planet, and it's a big cavern, and they're throwing these little grenade things in the sky, which were really drones to go around and, you know, figure out where everything is. And now we have those in real life, which is pretty awesome. They're drones, but anyway. But why is it happening like that? Well, no one gets angry when these movies do that. They split up into groups because they're like, okay, you take that quarter, we'll go straight, and you take the left one. And if it splits again, well, you know, maybe we all break left. Always break left, because that way we kind of stay towards center. Keep on the communication on the radio, and let's keep talking to each other the whole time. As soon as we lose communication, stop moving, go back the other way. Don't want to lose anybody. Something logical like that. We're not pissed off about that whole regiment, are we? So let me ask you, why is it when someone wants to explore round Earth, they're an asshole to flat Earth people? Flat Earth people are pissed off, or round people are pissed off that flat Earth people want to go do flat Earth. Some people go off to explore the Matrix. I mean, seriously, we're not talking about joking around here. People are really trying to figure it out. The woman in San Jose, they ended up dying. She's actually from Minnesota. She comes to Orange County. She goes through this thing. Someone shows her in Orange County. So apparently, that we're in the Matrix. She calls her mother, leaves this crazy hysterical message. She flies up to San Jose to get an award and then fly back home to her husband. She disappears, and then they find her in a parked car in a neighborhood of people that are like, man, that car was not here. She has no injuries, and suddenly she's dead. No cause of death. Her husband was, I think to this day, still trying to investigate her death. But she was told we were in a matrix. And she was told that she was shown. Or sorry, she said that she was told and shown proof that they're in, that we're in a matrix. I think I recently told you that, you know, a friend of mine lost his son. And he told me that, you know, a friend of the family came to him and said, you know, that your son showed up to me downtown Huntington Beach and said, I just want you to know I'm on the other side and I'm okay. These are words out of his mouth to me at his auto repair place. And I was like, well, that's weird, because that's exactly the words my grandmother chose to tell me right before she passed away. Okay. So, yeah, sounds like, it sounds like the afterlife's pretty goddamn real. And it sounds like it's okay. It's on the other side. It's okay. So why do we get pissed off that a bunch of us go in different directions? Isn't that a necessity at this point? And why is it a necessity? Because where we are is truly an unknown. We don't have God coming down, proving he or she is God, it, and then saying, okay, this is where you are. Let me show you. Okay, see this? I'm going to grab your soul. See, this is where you are. You like your body? Okay, now you're out of your body, right? You see your body? Pretty cool, right? You're astral projecting in one sense of the term. But now I'm going to lift you to a different cosmology, and you're going to see the mental realm. This Akashic record realm. Then I'm going to take you to the God plane. You're going to see my realm, which is also your realm. And I'll just tour you around. You see how there's a layer between you and me, and it's called a matrix, and it's actually some versions of you that have created this contact lens on a bigger ball that is the flat Earth disc. You're still on a ball, but you're inside this contact lens. Some of the people can say, well, you see how you're on a, you actually are on this weird disc, but we've created this illusion that you're in space and that there's celestial bodies. All the physics and all the expanding Earth completely support a globe, but it's all a ruse. The whole thing is on a flat disc. It's got a bubble around it. And it's because you're in a matrix. The moon used to be an old sun, and we're just messing around. For some reason, they can't just delete it, which means it's not code. It's probably a real thing. Or it's all code, and for some reason, that's just a clue to see who's smart and who's not smart. They're looking at you. I mean, just imagine they look at you on the other side, and you're just having a little debriefing. For some reason, you're on the other side. Maybe you're dead. Maybe you're going to just take a temporary. Your body's in trouble here on our plane, and you're going to come back to it. You're going to heal up just fine. But they got you over there, and you can just ask some questions. Like, well, what's the deal with the moon, man? Oh, what do you mean? Well, why is it there? Well, you know, it's got some romantic elements to it, and it's the first time we've ever needed a new sun because your old sun burned out. I mean, we taught you what ash looks like. Why did you look at the... Why is it when you have a campfire and you let everything burn down to ash, this oxidized matter, and then you look at the moon, and it's oxidized the same way that your campfire is, that you haven't figured out that that thing was on fire? Why would you look at like a million craters on the surface of the moon, all perfectly circular, and not have the epiphany that those aren't craters, that they're boiling marks, because it used to be the sun? It's a hard shell now. It's put there to see if you could figure out something. Wasn't intentional. It just happened that way, and you know, eventually we're going to make it go away. And then you're going to have a whole set of different theories you're going to figure out once you see that thing drift away, when gravity is supposed to pull it towards you. Phenomenon gravity or ethereal gravity should crash it into the surface of the Earth eventually. It shouldn't fly away like NASA said. What is this television show, Space 1999? But now let's go back to the cosmic record theory. This theosophy, religion, that you can see things, both past and present. I've told you on the show that I discovered like history before I researched it and found it to be at least documented somewhere. Now, whether or not it's true or not, well, I think it's pretty true, but like the whole Federal Reserve System, it came to me what the 20s were all about, what the 30s were all about, what the 40s were all about. And it all comes down to asking the question. Like I've always said on shows going back 7 years, you put a database query out there to the universe. If you put a very vague question out there, you're going to get a very vague answer. It's willing to work with you, but you've got to get specific. And that's why when you mulch ideas for a very long time, your question gains more sort of descriptors. To the point the query gains more what they would call in SQL where clause elements, right? Where this equals that, and this is less than that, and this, and this, and that. And suddenly the query just brings back exactly what you want. I would wager that it's easier to query the past than it is to query the future. Obviously, because we are the result of the past. If I was trying to parse where this current fascination with the Tartarian theory comes from, how is it that it appears, okay, that there's a bunch of really sophisticated structures in the middle of nowhere? Middle of Peru. The middle of China. It's all very, I'd say, Anglo-Saxon architecture from Rome. These buildings have their photographs taken the second that the camera exists, and they're already deteriorating. These buildings are in disarray. Well, a building has a certain lifespan. Look at Rome. How old's a Colosseum, man? It's over 2,000 years old. The Greek Parthenon, it's way over 2,000 years old. So, how long do some of these buildings exist? Well, with that information, with those physical objects that we can look at, and a bunch of other forensic, you know, archaeology, anthropology that we can put together, we as laymen can come up with a fairly good query for the universe. It's not going to be tight unless you're really lucky on the first try. But like everything that you simplify, like a mathematical algorithm is gigantic, and that's why they taught you algebra. Has no use in your life except to teach you how to refine a complex concept down to a real simple one. You will most likely get to a point where you're like, well, it's not important that I ask the universe about that. How about this? How about that? And eventually, poof, you get this epiphany. And then you start pulling that thread out of the sweater, right? It's pretty cool. When you try to query the future, oh, geez. It's almost mind-blowing, right? You get to a point where you have nothing to grasp onto. Well, it could be anything. The world could blow itself up tomorrow. We could be in a post-apocalyptic world with very few people on the surface of the planet. We could be in this, well, at least in terms of the weirdies in the world who run the place, this horribly weird world that maybe look really great, but it's like torture around every corner sort of thing, because that's what those scumbags like to do. And then maybe, don't hold your breath, humanity figures out that they are the ants, they're being run by grasshoppers, and they can just extinguish those folks, and we can start building a better world with super duper education, infinite resources. We limit our population and we limit our consumption of things because we understand Gene Roddenberry's world of Star Trek for the first time as a global society. War? Eh. No need for it. No banks are financing it. No banks are making money from it. And there's no giant global organization that's benefiting from it. Michael Jackson used to say, you know, I hear the music finished and then I simply just go in the studio and lay it down. And you've heard him do beatboxes of all of his favorite songs that he wrote. It's phenomenal. As a musician, when you hear a beatbox person that has no record contract and the need to sell 50 million records in the next 12 months, like Michael Jackson did when he released an album, and they just beatbox for fun. They're just having a blast. Michael's like, no, I got to create utter and complete perfection. As you might say, can you feel it, you know? Who else is like this? Well, I think there's several movie directors who either went scene to scene, and every time the scene was there and the assets were pulled together, they were like, well, let's change her hat, let's do this and this. Okay, now what are we saying again? Okay, that script doesn't really work anymore. It's close. Let me rewrite that dialogue. And they create one amazing movie after another. It's bizarre. Take like Stanley Kubrick, for instance. One movie after another, it's just this legendary film. Then you take someone like Steven Spielberg. He fizzled out. George Lucas fizzled out. Love the original franchises they put together. But some people just have this discipline to hang on to it forever. Nikola Tesla, we talk about him all the time, right? He could see machines in his head. All the bits and pieces. He was his own physics model inside his mind. Amazing. But this three-dimensional plane of time, where you've got an indivisible amount of seconds that you could pick next. Talked about this for several shows. Maybe the biggest trick about life is that we used to understand this empirical truth about the universe that you can sort of predict and pick the next second of your life. That's what The Secret was about. That's what a lot of What the Bleep Do We Know was all about, the movie. What the Bleep Do We Know was relying on neural peptides. And that's more of a physical body thing. The Secret was more about your entire destiny of your life. Well, I don't know about you, but I knew kids in school that had family members that were just whiny families. Sometimes it was based on their culture, but a lot of times it was just the mom and dad managed their life really poorly. And so they got themselves in a bad physical state. And so they brainwashed their children that they were going to be just as sick and as unhealthy as they were. Yep, and their child was as sick and as healthy, always sick. And as the mother or father would hypochondriac and try to get a lot of attention from folks for having that issue, constantly telling you what's wrong with them, constantly telling you what drug they're on or whatever, how they were near death. The children would come to school and do their version of that, and they were always sick, always, neuropeptides. They were thinking themselves sick. Other folks, you just have a positive, God-fearing, truth-oriented family. You're completely healthy. And it has to be some form of enlightenment. And, you know, I thought of an interesting analogy for enlightenment, because they always say enlightenment is about seeing more. That's the definition of enlightenment. And think about you standing out in front of your house or something, your hometown, some beloved place you really enjoy. And I just simply take you and I say, look, here's what I'm going to do for you. I'm going to lift you up very carefully. It's a nice warm day, no storm outside, clear sky. I'm going to take your body and I'm going to slowly just levitate you up a couple hundred feet. You're totally safe. Nothing's going to come by. You're good. And as I lift you up, the terrain that surrounds you suddenly comes into view because you're elevated much higher. And so now you have, like, perhaps a whole view of your neighborhood all at once. For any of us that got on a plane, we saw that, right? You look down and you saw people look like ants. And then your mind is trying to figure out, this is back in the before Google Maps or something, and you're trying to figure, oh, wow, I didn't even realize the highway goes like that and that my street goes like this. My whole life, I thought it was like this and like that. And now we see these top-down maps all the time on our cell phones when we're trying to go to point A to point B. And so you have this utter understanding of where your highways are, where your streets are. Now, you get me, right? So imagine that in every single field of knowledge that you want to learn about. You have to find the pathway that's going to lift you up so you can see more at the same time and gain a picture that's worth an infinite number of words. So I have to admit, you know, and I've said this long time ago, but, you know, when I hear this claim of mediums, people who are mediums, I think it exists 100%. I think there are people who can do it. John Edwards used to have that show. I think it was, what, the Sci-Fi Channel or something, where he'd sit in a town hall format and talk to people. I've had friends that go on the show, and it says like a 13-hour, you know, recording that's cut down to like two or three different shows. So it's a long process for him to get enough content to shoot one episode or edit it down to one episode. My friend who lost his son went and saw a medium. And he was just like a lot of us that are like, yeah, whatever. And he's like, this is going to be just embarrassing. And his fear was that his wife was going to fall for it and he wouldn't. And then there'd be a conflict at home that the mother would always want to see, because the son was like in his mid-20s. The mother would be all into seeing this woman and he'd be like, come on, honey, this is not real. But within a few seconds of meeting this woman, and they're trying to keep all the information from her so she has to go cold, understanding that any information she mines out of us, she can use that to pretend to know the son. Well, this is crazy. This little story is amazing. I don't know if I told you guys this story or not. I can't remember. But she said, you know, your son's here. He said immediately this woman starts laughing like his son. This woman. He said, that's weird, because my son had kind of a peculiar laugh. It was a very patented kind of laugh, and no one in the room would ever laugh like my son. And this woman starts laughing like my son. And it's not that she was like talking in his, you know, like the son was not possessing this woman's body necessarily in any of the conversation, but she would say, one of the first things she told him was she looks at the father, who's the most skeptical guy of this stuff. And she says, well, he wants you to take care of his fishing pole. And apparently this conversation then details out what I'm about to say. They have a lot of fishing poles. We live on the coast. There's fishing and stuff. But this specific thing was that there was this really cool red fishing pole. And the son, the father bought it for himself, but the son loved this fishing pole. And so what the son did as a joke, because he's a prankster, this is a big part of what the medium was able to prove to his sisters as well, and his mom and his dad, but he, before he passed away, he carved his initials in the handle of the cork handle on this fishing pole. And that every time they went fishing, he would make this joke, would you like to use your my fishing pole? And it was this funny contention between the two of them. It was this funny joke between the two of them. And this was all revealed in the conversation. And so he's like, oh my God, my son knows I'm not going to believe that this woman has to say. Mediums are a bunch of hoo-ha, right? But so he goes right for the jugular and something that only, seriously, only the two of them really understand. Mom was not necessarily a part of this circle of the fishing poles. So his mind was blown. He's like, oh my God, these people can be real. Now, it's obviously a lot of charlatans. Like I've said several times, I believe that some people can do it at certain times in their life, and maybe they lose the art of it or the circumstances don't repeat themselves, but they feel obligated to tell someone who's hurting that they are hearing something. And so they lean on warm and cold methodologies, hoping and praying that the person shows up. As far as I can discern in my later years of life, there shouldn't be any reason why the soul can't talk to a medium if they're being legit, right? But there's three other pranks that this kid was pulling. He starts pulling pranks on his family. And so they eventually get to a Zoom call because COVID hit. He didn't have COVID or anything. It was a pre-existing situation. The shot wasn't even out, just so you know. So the sisters, one of them's local. One of them is coming from like Arizona or something. And one of the sisters goes, well, ask him about the kitchen. And the woman goes, she's listening. And she goes, oh, yeah, he did that. And she's like, tell me what he did. She's like, he pulled all the drawers out in your kitchen several times, didn't he? All the drawers. Opened all the cupboards, pulled out all the drawers, and just let you find it that way, right? She's like, boom. And the whole family's seeing this being confirmed, so they're just freaking out. The other one was the other sister says, well, explain the candy canes. Okay, well, this family had candy canes, the big ones that you hang on your Christmas tree. Not, you could have eaten them the day you bought them, but these things are apparently like 18 years old. And when the sister / daughter moved out of the house, the father and mother gave those candy canes because she was one of the first sisters to have children. And so the woman's like, yep, he did that. And she's like, okay, what did he do? Well, you know, he put them in your hallway and your dog actually found them, right? So the way the story goes, there's a closet that these candy canes are way up on the top and the kids know that they're there and they think they can eat them. And of course, parents never let them eat them, or the uncle who passed away. But he had actually taken them down while they were gone. I know it sounds crazy, but you know, what can I say? Put them about every foot from the closet into the front room. And the dog actually found them and started kind of tearing them apart and licking them and breaking them. And of course, the sister finds it that way. Number three is that the mother and father have this French door that goes out to their patio where they barbecue. Now, one of the doors is always locked. It's got those latches at the top and the bottom. And the other one is the only one they ever open. And it consequently is the only one that actually allows in the air, because we don't have air conditioners in Southern California most of the time. So it just lets the air flow through the house, at least on the coast anyway, flows through the house and it cools it down beautifully, right? Well, he's out there cooking. The mom's inside. Kids are all gone. And the son's on the other side. And so she came through and found this latch door open. And so she's like, you know, what's going on? You know, who, you know, maybe he did it, whatever. And so eventually this door gets unlocked so many times that the wife's like, hey, why do you keep opening this door? You know, it doesn't work. And he's like, what are you talking about? We never opened that door. She says, I know, but I found it open. Over the course of like two or three nights, this door keeps getting unlocked and swung wide open. It has latches, people. This isn't like the wind could blow it open sort of thing, right? Okay. So what the Akashic theosophy, okay, espouses is this mental plane of existence. That's what they called it. Now, we on this show might call it like the soul plane. It's important, I think, to not envision the cosmologies on different almost pressure layers, right? So you always see the diagram because an artist is trying to show you that there are layers of cosmology, meaning a system that accounts for all reality within a particular discipline, right? So we're in a physical realm right now, sharing these ethereal bodies, and then your soul realm would be above that, and then above that, and above that. It's not above, above, above. It's actually all on top of itself, okay? But again, mankind has a huge problem thinking about fourth dimensional existence, which is time which is an illusion of change, right, goes away, and all things can be on top of each other because they're occupying different realms of literally the definition of existence. And so if you had ethereal particles making up this entire universe, okay, they're occupying a completely different paradigm of existence to be recognized as what they are. And your soul, which is very recognizable, right? I look at you and I talk to you. I'm talking to your soul. It's just that easy. Every conversation you've ever had, every time you've ever stared someone in the eyes, and whether it was a inviting stare or a formidable stare, you're staring into someone's soul. You really are. There's something about the design of a human being that the eyes are the gateway to the soul. It's not just a cliche. Remember, cliches are basically definitions of truth that stand the test of time, and therefore they become a cliche. The sad thing is that wisdom is inside of every good cliche. Now, there are catchphrases that are different than cliches, in my opinion. Catchphrases can be completely full of shit. Like, well, you know, everybody dies of cancer. Well, all politicians are corrupt. Those are catchphrases. Well, a lot of them are. And a lot of times in modern society, you do die of cancer. But if you keep catchphrases that aren't sort of like the core wisdom of the universe, like the Aesop fable of the boy who called wolf, that's more of a catchphrase situation than it is more of a cliche than a catchphrase, because it is like, yeah, if you keep lying to everybody, eventually no one's going to trust you. You want to be that person? Meaning you can't affect change in the world because no one believes a word you say. So mediums have been the key to the rebirth of initially Atlantis. I think this is very interesting. You know, there's the few people in the past are super famous for this. What's interesting about it to me is that a scam always has some patterns to it. There's many patterns to scams, but one of the patterns is this. For whatever reason, the person running the scam needs to feel important. They know they're intelligent. They're intelligent enough to lie to people and get people to believe them. Think about the very hubris, the arrogance of a snake oil salesman going from one country town to another in America when it was reforming or forming for the first time, right? In the 1800s, selling elixirs that don't do anything. Or maybe elixirs that convince a person to manufacture the neural peptides in their brain to actually heal themselves, but it's a placebo effect. They're making hand over fist money. And so it's like, wow, I am so freaking smart. I can put one over on everybody. Because there's always someone who wants to believe. Man, are we not in the absolute epitome of that right now? All these truth platforms are nothing but snake oil salesmen. I mean, there's a lot of truth out there, but how many times you got to hear that the drink is bad, right? How many times you got to hear that XYZ politician's bad? How many times? How many crimes do you have to hear them commit before you just go, yep, now let's talk about a solution. Let's get organized. Da-da-da-da, right? Now everyone's just eating it like popcorn, right? Affecting no change on their own life or anyone else's life, right? But here comes a guy who hears through reading, because there's no internet, he's buying books, he's hearing, maybe he's reading Plato, this theory of Atlantis. Okay. And it's not just Plato, right? There's an anthropologist who has a channel on YouTube. I forget his name right off the top of my head, but he talks about it too. He talks about it as a whole continent that was in the center of Atlantic Ocean. And that they were essentially full of like these advanced sort of Anglo-Saxon Nephilim kind of people. And it was all good until people started getting in boats from Europe and started going out there in the ocean and bumping into it and then coming home and telling stories about it, which makes everybody want to go there, right? And so eventually they realized, this is according to this guy, of course, that you know, they had to make sure, and they had to come across the shore, to the shore, and basically fix the problem, either cancel out the curiosity if they could, or somehow make a treaty with someone who says, you keep coming out here, we're going to start sinking ships, okay? So just tell people we don't exist, otherwise we're going to mess you up. According to this guy, it evolved to a point where they started mixing their blood with Europeans and said, okay, well, we got to start making love to people because we're going to have to, you know, create hybrids such that they are more preoccupied with who they are now as opposed to who we are way out in the ocean, right? I don't know that I believe any of this stuff, okay? But it was a medium that started this whole thing. It exists, and everybody wanted to believe it. Now, here's the scam pattern, in my opinion. Once this dude had exhausted the Atlantis story, suddenly he discovered Lumeria, the Pacific version. Well, Easter Island's pretty interesting, isn't it? Technically speaking, who knows what the Hawaiian Islands looked like at some point in time? Now, how you would erase these continents off the bottom of the ocean, I don't know. Are they there and everybody who takes a ship over to Europe just keeps missing it? You know, this Catalina Island that's out there, some little continent strip out there? Nah, I don't think those places existed there. And then you see people rip apart the only writings that have ever been actually written about this kind of stuff, and it's very close to the Mediterranean. It's actually, you know, perhaps some of the outlets into the Atlantic Ocean. It's nowhere out in the Atlantic Ocean. It's an advanced civilization. What happens to the theory of advanced civilization? I think this is interesting. We look at it from a potentially a 2022 definition of advanced civilization. Oh my gosh, well, you know, we have today, so it's got to be better than what we have today. It's George Jetson ships, and it's like teleportation technology, everything we have in our science fiction envelopes today. Doesn't have to be. Doesn't have to be. Look at all the rocks that were found in Egypt with circular saw marks. Circular saws? Really? How about all those hone marks that are inside the stones where they dug out these perfect, you know, from 6 inches to 2 feet out of limestone and granite? And there's specialists who study the cylinders that come out of the hole that they've kept, right? And they said, look, this is an enormous amount of pressure on a diamond bit blade to cut a number 8 to number 9 rock. It's got to be a number 10 blade. And it was finished within 60 seconds. We can see how fast this stuff goes down because rock melts at a certain rate, and we do this today with big giant machines. That's advanced technology, but it's not mind-blowing, you know, to today. But back then it would have been amazing, right? So how do you tap into this plane? This sort of Akashic plane, this mental plane. I think there's methods to teach yourself how to do it. Part of it is to strip yourself of any belief system that you can't get information from the past and get information from the database of the universe. I've told you guys this in several different like self-improvement episodes, but this will be a little different. And of course, I learned to refine what I'm saying over the years of having like hundreds of conversations with people every year talking about this exact thing. I just went to a birthday party yesterday with a bunch of amazing people, and man, we just had one conversation after another. It was just everybody's on the same page in one way or another, and with these deep philosophical categories where if you didn't have a commonality with one person, let's say topic A, which this person over there, you go over here to this other person, and they have, you know, 20 years of like deep diving philosophical exploration of their own minds in section B. It was just crazy. If you can figure your life to take advantage of information, I have this sneaky suspicion that I've told you several times since season one that the universe will take you seriously. For instance, I've said this several times, so for the OG listeners, I apologize, but this is important. If you wanted a guitar solo, you want to learn how to play a guitar solo, guess what? You better own a guitar. You better own perhaps a electric guitar, because acoustics aren't really well known for a lot of solos, unless you're maybe B.B. King and you can pluck one out. But still, it's always electric guitar thing. And then it's like, well, if I gave you the solo, the universe says to you, what are you going to do with it? Because I got bands all around the world who will take the same exact gift, play it, and put it into a song and enrich the entire universe of, well, which is Earth, right, with this beautiful sounding sequence of notes. So you're going to have to get serious if you want things to be bestowed upon you. So perhaps one of the accessibility requirements to tapping into this plane is to configure your life in a way that you can take advantage of it. Now, you may get Chotskys like Philip K. Dick got with his son. But what was Philip K. Dick's thing? He talked about the exact same thing that Nostradamus was noted for doing. Now, Nostradamus, not Nostradamus, he takes a lot of notes. Nostradamus was always said to look into a candle flame. And that's the way he got the 60,000-foot stare. So he's not really looking at the flame and focusing and, wow, that's fire. You know, he's looking through the flame. Philip K. Dick said that he would sit there and he would just pick a region in the room. And he was, as far as I know, he would always look down kind of at a 45-degree angle. You can do whatever you want. Makes you feel kind of abstracted away when you start having like that, like some people might have like a purple blackout or something if they do this. But he would stare down and he would just forget the room and he would see the universe show up and show him the stories that he would write. And he was a very intense science fiction writer. There's X-1 episodes where Philip K. Dick wrote. I want to say he wrote one of the Twilight Zones, but I'm not sure. I think he did. But he was one of the guys that wrote in the 50s where you would write and you get a story published in a little sci-fi booklet that would go out every week and people get these little books and they'd read it. It's printed on like soft paper, not a hardback thing. So when he's sitting on his sofa and his son has got this ailment, well, he's developed this lubricant between he and this mental plane, this film that records all history and all knowledge. And so he was able to tap into it for a personal reason to help his son. And it was just like, well, you're part of that club that can get in because you take your life extremely seriously. Now, let me give you sort of a minor pep talk here about this whole thing. For those of you, I'd say 50 and over, at least 45 and over, you know for a fact that you grew up without the internet. And if you were sitting in a tiny little town somewhere and you had some really cool stuff you want to share with the world, the prospect of you actually getting that information out to the world was really rough. I mean, who do you even call, man? You'd have to have some elder in your family, in your town, some teacher, some uncle, aunt, whatever, that would know the people outside your little town. Say, I got a friend in Chicago, I got a friend in New York, friend in LA. We'll get your stuff out there. Someone at a university, if you're a scientific person. But today, that's no longer a problem. You write a song, you write some top 10 hit. You're never going to write another song in your life, but you manage to bang out, Jesse's Girl or something, right? And you put it out there. You can sell it right on iTunes immediately. Any venue out there, Amazon, you can sell it. You could hold it back and maybe contact some people who score movies and go, man, I got this song. It's just really cool and I'll let you have it, It might be a good sitcom theme song, So the versatility of this theory right now is just incredible. The amount of information that we have access to is incredible. Here's another benefit of the internet. Save all the fake stuff that's out there. If you're trying to be creative, let's say, now, music-wise, you can find so many different musicians that are exactly like the kind of style that you like. It's incredible. And if you have a style of music, you can't find anybody doing that style, well, then maybe you're an adamant. Maybe you're, Prince, David Bowie, something like that, where you got a whole new thing. You just keep it to yourself, make a whole album of it, drop it out there, and you'll blow the world's mind, like The Cure or something, right? Okay. Let's say you're a creative painter, writer, whatever it is. You've never been one of these before, but you want to be one. You just feel it inside yourself, right? Okay, so instead of just studying like the Akashic Records and just finding out a weird theory that's kind of neat to study and do a kind of rabbit hole digging on it, you can actually turn that around. You can continue that research, but you could actually turn it around and use it as a tool to expand who you are in this particular super finite journey of this life that you're in. Well, think about all the imagination that's triggered when you hear a new great conspiracy, man. The Tartaria stuff is so amazing. We've heard about this stuff. I did the episodes on the giants and pygmies, the big people and the small people that used to exist here on Earth, that we think we still see the genetics popping up all over the place, right? Okay. Well, when you read about these things, do you ever think about the backstory of what that could really mean? South America, as supposedly, was it Magellan ran into this group? Another dude, 30 years later, went right back to the place where Magellan documented seeing a giant. He ran into hundreds of giants, okay? Where the children were 6 feet tall with grotesque low voices, he said. This other dude. What's the backstory? You're struggling to write a movie?
Really?
With all that crap out there, you can't think of a cool idea? What about all this Tartarian stuff? Forget if it's real. Who cares? I mean, if it is, you could base it on a true fact, right? You could put that little blurb in front of your film, in front of your book. Why don't you write the story of who these people were? Go look up the Gilded Era. Who were these people? Go look up the videos on Bioshock, the video game. 1, 2, 3, and 4. And you're going to see there's a lot of good stuff out there for you. What we're trying to do is lube up your brain to start seeing things. You see it all the time. Anybody who's scared of a scary movie. I can't watch scary movies. Why? Well, that makes me think of whatever the hell was in the movie. Well, you have a very creative mind then. You have a very creative mind. You interpret that as weakness. Well, I watch zombie things and it makes me feel strange. Okay, why don't you write what you're worried about and we'll call it episode 22, season 4, you know? Or it's a whole new movie. H.R. Giger took his fears of death and made the most macabre set of artwork you've ever seen in your life. But that's how he kind of expunged it out of his system. When you see that guy, and you see how frail he was as a human being, and how sort of reserved he was, even though he was knee-deep in Satanism, it makes me wonder whether or not he really had the constitution or sort of that bravado to get out there and actually engage in any of it. Maybe he was just a supplier of absolutely macabre art, and through commissioned art or whatever, he just serendipitously just made this really super dark, crazy stuff. They just used him as a paint job on what they were doing. You never know, right? Choices, okay? Let me give you another example. Now, you know we're all struggling with short attention span, depending on how you live your life. Every one of us struggle with this, okay? Like again, Carnegie said, the reason why he was so successful is he could think about one topic for more than 5 minutes. One thing for more than 5 minutes. Sounds easy, but he tested all of Congress at the time that was trying to accuse him of cheating to get wealthy. And I don't know what test he gave him, but they all failed. Okay. We want you guys, we want all of us, to be as powerful as human beings as we possibly can. We're trying to tap into this mental realm of the Akashic Records, right? Let me give an example of where we might not have the patience initially to start tapping into this realm. What if I were to put down in front of you the most beautiful writing utensil that you love? Pen, inkwell pen, pencil, whatever you like. And a beautiful sheet of like thick cotton paper. Just the best paper in the world to write on. And it's sort of nighttime like it is now, and I just put a nice spotlight right on that. Everything's great. You feel wonderful. You've had a good day. I said, look at that piece of paper right there. Now, I want you to imagine what could be on that piece of paper. What would be the coolest thing that you would ever want that piece of paper to have on it? That could be illustrated on that piece of paper using this writing utensil right here. Well, immediately, you'll come up with something. Immediately. Depending on who you are as a person, you will see an image in your head that I don't see in my head. And the next person, next person, next person, we're all seeing something different. The second that you can imagine for a fleeting second something on that piece of paper, you have literally just tapped into the mental realm and brought that down and projected it inside your mind's eye on that piece of paper. Now, if you want to be responsible for illustrating what that is, well, it's going to take a little bit of time, right? Because what would be required? Well, you're going to need to expand that pinhole view, that tiny microsecond, depending on how powerful you are with this realm initially, that microsecond of that thing coming down and projecting on the piece of paper, you're going to need to see it there for prolonged periods of time. Artists who are really, really good at this, okay, they just see it and it stays there. It just stays there. And so they're like, oh, I'm just going to trace this thing I'm seeing on the piece of paper. Now, I asked my buddy Sid Mead before he passed away. I said, how well do you transfer what you see to a piece of paper? Well, really a canvas, right? But he does like 1,000 illustrations before he commits it to canvas, right? He said, I'm getting pretty good at it. And I'm asking him in his 70s, okay? A dude that could render like a dream. He could render anything that he could conceive of. Both things that could exist and things that are just abstract. Most of the time, everything was real. Whether it be a super futuristic world, he could render it. If you ever want to really see what the future might look like, and I'm not even joking here, go study all of Sid Mead's artwork, especially his U.S. Steel stuff in the 60s. But I said, how accurate is it from what you see to what you write on the piece of paper? And he says, well, it's never the way I truly see it in my head. Now, coming from a Leonardo like that dude, that shows you that even with I think uncontested mastery of illustration and painting and light control. I mean, this guy painted light like nobody I've ever seen. Chrome and sunsets and just sun going through a room and bouncing off all the different finishes and stuff. And understanding, well, that pencil tray is actually pure white when you hold it in the light, but I know that light bouncing off here and here, this would be yellow. I mean, he's that kind of guy, right? The journey never ends. And usually, that sort of thing is a bummer for a lot of like junior artists. You're like, yeah, or junior maybe minds even. And I was there. Trust me. I was like, man, that's a bummer. And then when I really thought about it, I was like, you never want to actually catch the bunny, right? The greyhound should never be able to catch the bunny in the race. Because if he could, he might lose all of his will to race. When I used to role play with my buddies in the 90s, when I got into EA, Electronic Arts, there was a lesson I learned. I've shared this once before, but it was the lesson that if you create a role-playing system, and it was actually a superheroes kind of role-playing system called Champions by George MacDonald, you never want to let Batman resolve his problem with his parents being killed in the alley. My buddy had a girlfriend that died at the beginning. And this is in a fictional sense in the story. He had a girlfriend that died, and that was sort of his Batman moment. The reason why he became a crime-fighting hero was that his girlfriend had been brutally murdered somewhere in his past, and he decided, I got to make sure this never happens again. So some point, 6 months down the line, the events work out such that his girlfriend is sort of coming back in from the soul plane. And through a chain of events, I allowed her to gain physical being. And my buddy looks at me and goes, okay, I'm out. And I said, what do you mean? He says, well, I'm not going to play this character anymore. I'm done. And I said, what do you mean? He goes, well, you're never supposed to let me get what's driving me. You can't let me resolve what's driving me because I don't want to play anymore. I'm going to go, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to spend the rest of my life with that girl. I don't need to be a crime fighter anymore, ever. Why would I risk my life? I got something to live for now. I learned my lesson. But that's sort of the lesson with everything in our life, right? You wonder why so much of the truth of the universe is hidden. Well, right around the corner of having all the answers could be that moment. Oh, I'm just going to be like an omnipotent cube that just sits in the universe like Star Trek and just be a jerk to everybody because I just don't really have anything challenging me. I can snap my fingers and anything happens, right? What I find fascinating about this whole journey, especially with information that's being burped up to the internet, and it's obviously better to find these sort of topics on personal websites that are maybe 15, 20 years old. They're still old. No one's maintaining the site anymore, but someone spent their whole life 20, 30, 40 years studying this one thing, reading all the books, talking to people, traveling the world. And just before they either retire or pass away, they made a webpage. And they just burped all this information into this cruddy little website. Now, of course, people can make these cruddy websites as well. And they can fake all the copyright dates and all this other stuff. If you really want to see if it exists, check it in waybackmachine.org and or archive.org, which will send you over to that one. You can check to see if it's really old. But you get sort of this cleansed, at least take on it. Someone's take on what they interpreted from all this information that they gathered. It's powerful. It's cool. I think that for folks that got onto the flat earth thing, for instance, there was a fantasy that immediately occurred, which is, I'm going to get to the edge of the dome and I'm going to leave like Truman. But there's so many flavors of it, right? Well, one of them has an edge that's covered in ice, and you just got to go far enough out on that, and on the iceberg, you know, the Antarctica iceberg, and you're going to bump into it. And, you know, you won't see it before you bump into it. That's the other funny thing. Like, you won't see like snow that drifted up against it for 100 miles in the sky. Nope, it'll be just clean all the way down. There's some guy cleaning it off every once in a while. And then there's the second version, which is, well, it's there, but it's got continents, you know, in certain, you know, different circles. One theory has one set of continents, another one has two, and the other one has three sets of continents that go out beyond the ice barrier. It's the fantasy that you'll ever be able to find those other locations. Well, will you ever be able to, if you were a billionaire, trillionaire, like, what would you do to find it? You go down there, they're going to shoot you out of the sky. What you going to do? One of the things I've been following recently, there's a great channel on Telegram, which I keep talking about, called Truth News or True News. They have been posting, I believe it's that one, there's a Tartarian one I've been following too, but they've been posting like really old interviews of UFO sightings. And one of them is in the early 80s in, it's either England or Scotland, but I can really understand them, so I'm thinking it's England. But and then there's one in 2008 in Texas. Just as flip phones are dying and smartphones are starting to happen, right? You have two sightings that are exactly the same between these two groups of people. They see what looks like a dot in the sky, that it turns red, and then eventually they can notice it's an oval. It's big, and it comes up and stays for quite a while. And it shines a red light that is so intense that in one description, the farmer who took care of like a farmland just outside this village, it was like a literally a village, he woke up and looked, and there's people outside looking at this thing, okay? There's like two or three different groups looking at this thing at the same time from all different vantage points, all interviewed in these old videos. And the dude looks up at his ceiling and he says, you know, the red coming in from the window, I thought my field was on fire, because that's the only time I've ever seen, you know, this kind of red flushing into my room. And so he comes out and he sees it, and everybody's interviewed, and they're all saying, you know, how this thing had no noise to it whatsoever. Some kids said, they said, well, you know, like three little kids, like probably between 10 and 12, probably more like 12, but I wouldn't even say 13. They're all describing it differently, from different perspectives, I should say, but they don't contradict each other. It's tremendous. And so this one in Texas, okay, it gets seen by all kinds of people. And it's being, you know, this interview now, it's in 2008, so you get some HD 16x9 cameras in there, and they're filming, and it's kind of one guy initially, and you're thinking, okay, this could be the charlatan, right? The guy that's just needing to create a little stir in his tan, he's going to be popular. Nope, it's seen by tons of people. His wife, this thing hung out for like 10 minutes, and then supposedly it broke into two, or another one arrives, and then eventually some fighter jets are scrambled to chase them away. Seen by a bunch of people. They interview this guy outside this, what looks like some warehouse. I don't know what he was doing. Totally different guy. He describes the red, and he's like, he said it was the brightest red I've ever seen in my life, but it didn't hurt my eyes. Then four kids are interviewed at some like Oktoberfest sort of thing. I don't think it was Oktoberfest, but some party outside, and they're described, all four of them, and they're just being really real. And one guy says, I got a picture of it on my phone. So the guy interviewing, who seemed to be European, like not even he spoke English, but it wasn't like it was his native language. He says, well, can I see the picture on the phone? And he's like, well, yeah, you know, and I go, okay. And it's a flip phone, so it's got a crappy camera, totally overexposed light in the frame, but it's definitely a distinct source of light, black around this thing. And of course, you know, with those crappy cameras, you can't see anything. Now, the only anomaly with the Texas one, the guy said he saw it big time and who was leading this interview, says, you know, I usually carry like two cameras with me at all times in my truck. And he goes, this one time I didn't have my film and I could just kill myself for not having it or kick myself, right? But he talks to his wife, his buddy's wife, and then he goes into town and he's talking. It's just crazy. So two different sightings, roughly 40 years apart, roughly 35 years apart, seeing the same exact thing. Well, that's one of those situations where it's like, okay, how do you explain all this stuff? We have to like pull all the stuff together that seems like it has some basis in reality. One's in England, one's in Texas. Okay, so I don't think America is going to be allowed to fly stuff over British territory in a way that's going to freak out the British citizens, nor the other way around. So these things seem to be independent. But they're putting up a bunch of these videos, by the way. I'm downloading them all, by the way. So we're trying to access this specific realm of the soul realm, of all knowledge, which is only, I should mention, remind you, because I have to remind myself every once in a while, the knowledge is only relevant to whatever paradigm you're currently existing in, right? I'm not sure how much. I think there definitely is something there because of people who have passed on, who come back to let us know they're okay. Now, this friend of mine who lost his son in his mid-20s, well, and that's a real painful situation, and he should be on this earth. So I'm sure he's trying to make sure that's like, hey, I'm okay, and I'm messing with you, man. I'm pulling your drawers out. I'm putting candy canes all over your house. I'm opening the door. Hey, don't mess with my fishing pole because, you know, it's mine, Dad. You know, he's trying to, like, use comedy as a way, because this was his nature, to calm everybody down. And he totally succeeded doing this. My grandmother's like, hey, you know, you don't need me to dance around the house or anything weird. I just wanted to let you know I'm on the other side and I'm okay. Same exact words as the kid said, right? I couldn't believe my buddy said this out loud to my face. I snapped my fingers. I said, dude, this is real. So let me tell you some stories. Boom. But yeah, so you cross over and let's say you're at peace. Well, how much do the mysteries of this realm matter on the other side? Sure, when we're human, we want to know. I mean, are dinosaurs a bunch of bullshit? Because I think they are, right? Where the hell were we the entire time? Does the universe really exist? Is ether something real? What's going on? Who in history was a complete fake out? You know? What's all that shit on the back of the $1 bill in America? You know, it's like there are questions that are relevant as a human being. But imagine you just take a big, deep breath and a big exhale in the form of a soul. And you're looking at this other realm going, man, this is cool, man. Like, this is the best asset I've ever had in my life, except I'm not hallucinating. This is what is really here. And the other thing, too, I mean, this is all just to kind of illustrate paradigm possibilities such that when you try to maybe access this mental realm, you have a sense of perspective of what you're really asking about, right? And what really matters. And maybe we get frustrated that Houdini never proved to his wife that he was on the other side. It was something that he told his wife he would do. And to our knowledge, she never said that anything ever happened. But we don't consider for any length of time what is on the other side in terms of other beings. So you're losing your current family and friends. Bummer. Total bummer, depending on your situation, okay? Especially the younger that you are. But let's say you've lived a good life and, you know, it's, you know, you could take another year or two, whatever. You're maybe in your 90s or whatever. And then there's all your relatives, all your best friends that have passed on the other side. A bunch of the people that, like Nikola Tesla, you get to hang out with the dude. And he's different. He's not Nikola Tesla anymore. He's a soul. And you're just, let's just sit down and talk. Oh, there's God over there. My gosh, you know. Whatever else might be real on the other side. So the relevance of this world is perhaps like a dream. When you wake up, dreams tend to fade away. Sometimes. Sometimes dreams hang on for a long time. The ones you remember. But most of them, they just fade away. And you think when you wake up, it's so important. That dream was so much fun and so important. You don't want to leave that realm. But then you're like, oh, today was a good day. So it could be the same on the other side. Metaphorically illustrated through dreaming here in this world so that you actually understand the process, right? Do I think we can see the past by simply asking questions? Well, see the past? I've never experienced that particular one personally. I'm not sure a lot of the people that claim to be mediums have really talked about seeing things very literal. Nostradamus being one that probably did. Consensus reality is also a big element to this. Are we all group hallucinating this entire existence? Therefore, history is nothing more than the consensus of what history might be. Does history even exist? Are we just here imagining things in the past? Well, the only real realm that exists is now, right? It's the only thing that exists. Every time you preoccupy yourself with the past and the future, but especially the future, I mean, you do have to plan every once in a while to get something done, but if you just were to take now at its ultimate absolute seriousness, well, you want to write that movie? Then you better write it right now. If you want to go say hi to your loved ones, go do that right now. Do whatever you need to do, whatever you want to do with your life now. Do your wants and your needs. Do your wants first and your needs first, your wants second, excuse me. I think you'll live a pretty cool life, right? The mental realm, practice. Practice how you close your eyes and you can imagine things that don't exist. And then you can open your eyes and whatever's here is here. Don't convince yourself it's two different realms. I mean, in terms of being way over there and way over here. It's all on top of itself. What was it? Aristotle supposedly was the guy that said, close your eyes and envision a circle. Then open your eyes and try to draw it on paper. See how you can't do it? It's perfect in your mind, but you can't quite draw it by hand perfectly with your hand. That is a mechanism being used to say there's a spiritual realm and there's a physical realm, and they're different. But remember, you just closed your eyes and got it. Isn't that cool? So this stuff is right on top of you. It is flowing through you. You are living in it. It's like having an infinite number of swimming pools around you at the same time, but it's got plenty of air and oxygen to breathe. You're never going to drown. Ever, ever, ever. It's all right there for the taking. So practice. Maybe you'll discover something about yourself. Hope you feel me. And if you haven't been to deepthoughtsradio.com, please go. It's got everything there. Short bumper today. Patreons and PayPal people, thank you so much. Take care of yourself and someone else, and I'll see you on the next Deep Thoughts. Over and out.